Punts. Wife Punts. The Wife Punts Podcast.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode number 2 of the Wise Plants podcast, a little place in cyberspace to explore, speak, and share ideas about these wonderful little allies that we have, the Wise Plants. One of the purposes of this show is to encourage you to find your plant ally or allies, the plant or plants that will improve your life and make it more enjoyable and joyful. Plants can bring us endless benefits. They can make us happier. They can make us healthier. They could make us more aware about ourselves, our surroundings, our world, and the other worlds. They can give us energy, or they could help us eliminate stress and go to sleep. They can heal, but we must be careful, because some of them might as well kill. It's all about finding the right plant ally for you and developing a harmonious and responsible relationship with it to obtain the benefits, to reap the rewards, and avoid the risks of using plants irresponsibly. Today we'll open the episode with a talk that Stefano Mancuso, the founder of the study of plant neurobiology, gave in a TED conference in Oxford in 2010. A link to the video of this talk, which contains very interesting visuals, will be provided in the show's notes. The biographical page of Stefano Mancuso at TED.com reads as follows. Stefano Mancuso is a founder of the study of plant neurobiology, which explores signaling and communication at all levels of biological organization, from genetics to molecules, cells, and ecological communities. From his laboratory near Florence, Mancuso and his team explore how plants communicate or signal with each other, using a complex internal analysis system to find nutrients, spread their species, and even defend themselves against predators. The research continues to transform our view of plants from simple organisms to complex ecological structures and communities that can gather, process, and most incredibly, share important information. In his presentation, Stefano will talk about the terrible underestimation that Western civilization has towards plants, considering them basic and simple organisms, and often forgetting or ignoring or taking for granted their role in nature. Now, as the author makes his presentation with the help of videos, a few explanations are necessary. Sequoiadendrum gigantinum, the living organism that he mentions in his talk, is actually a tree. He'll mention the name of the species, but he won't mention that it's a tree. A little further on, he will start talking about plant movements, and he will show 3 amazing videos that you really need to check out by going to the notes section of the podcast and following the link to watch the TED Talk video that you will hear. And finally, Stefano will describe some plants as yin plants or yang plants. Yin expands to produce cold, quiescence, diffusion, and lightness. It is
inclusive, gentle, tranquil,
and magnetic. Yang, on the other hand, contracts to provide density, activity, heat, and connectedness. It is
fiery,
abundant,
concentrated,
and active.
You're listening to the Wise Plants Podcast. Have you found your plant ally yet?
TED Talks are recorded live at the TED Conference. This episode features plant neurobiologist Stefano Mancusco. This talk contains powerful visuals. Download the video at TED.com. Here's Stefano Mancusco.
Sometimes ago, browsing a very old magazine, I found this observation test about the story of the Ark. And the artist that drew this observation test did some errors, had some mistakes, are more or less 12 mistakes. Some of them are very easy. There is a funnel, an aerial part, a lamp, and clockwork key on the Ark. Some of them are about the animals, the number. But there is a much more fundamental mistakes in the overall story of the Ark that is it's not reported here. And this problem is, where are the plants? So now we have God that is going to submerge Earth permanently, or at least for a very long period, and no one is taking care of plants. Noah needs to take care of every kind of bird, of every kind of animal, of every kind of creature that moves, but no mention about plants. Why? In another part of the same story, all the living creatures are just the living creatures that came out from the Ark. So birds, livestock, and wild animal. Plants are not living creatures. This is the point. It's a point that is not coming out from the Bible, but it's something that it's really accompanied the humanity. Let's have a look at this nice code that it's coming from a Renaissance book. Here we have the description of the order of nature. It's a nice description because it's starting from left, you have the stones. Immediately after the stones, the plants that are just able to live. We have the animals that are able to live and to sense. And on the top of the pyramid, there is the man. It's not the common man. It's the homo studiosus, the studying man. This is quite comforting for people like me. I'm a professor. And to be over there on the top of creation, but it's something completely wrong. You know very well about professor, but it's also wrong about plants. Because plants are not just able to live, they are able to sense. They are much more sophisticated in sensing than animals. Just to give you an example, every single root apex is able to detect and to monitor concurrently and continuously at least 15 different chemical and physical parameters. And they are also able to show and to exhibit such a wonderful and complex behavior that can be described just with the term of intelligence. Well, but this is something, this underestimation of plants is something that is always with us. Let's have a look at this short movie now. We have David Attenborough. Now, David Attenborough is really a plant lover. He did some of the most beautiful movie about plant behavior. Now, when he speak about plants, everything is correct. When he speak about animal, tend to remove the fact that plants exist. The blue whale, the biggest creature that exists on the planet, that is wrong. Completely wrong. The blue whale, it's a dwarf. If compared with the real biggest creature that exists on the planet, that is this wonderful, magnificent Sequoiadendron giganteum. And this is a living organism that have a mass of at least 2,000 tons. Now, the story that plants are some low-level organisms has been formalized very in many times ago by Aristotle, that in the Anima, that it's a very influential book for the Western civilization, wrote that the plants are on the edge between living and not living. They have just a kind of very low-level soul. It's called the vegetative soul, and because they lack movement, and so they don't need to sense. Let's see. This is, okay, some of the movement of the plants are very well known. This is a very fast movement. This is a Dionaea, a Venus flytrap, hunting, has nails. Sorry for the snail. This has been something that has been refused for centuries, despite the evidence. No one can say that the plants were able to eat animals, because it was against the order of nature. But plants are also able to show a lot of movements. Some of them are very well known, like the flowering. It's just a question to use some techniques, like the time lapse. Some of them are much more sophisticated. Look at this young beings that it's moving to catch the light every time, and it's really so graceful. It's like a dancing angel. They are also able to play. They are really playing. These are young sunflowers, and what they are doing is they cannot be described with any other term. Start playing. They are training themselves, like as many young animals do, to the adult life, where they will be called to track the sun all the day. They are able to respond to gravity, of course, so the shoots are growing against the vector of gravity and the roots toward the vector of gravity. But they are also able to sleep. This is what a Mimosa pudica. So during the night, they call the leaves and reduce the movements. And during the day, you have the opening of the leaves and much more movements. This is interesting because the sleeping machinery, it's perfectly conserved. It's the same in plants, in insects, in the animals. And so if you need to study sleeping problem, it's much more easy to study on plants, for example, and than in animals. And it's much more easy even ethically. It's a kind of vegetarian experimentation. Plants are even able to communicate. They are extraordinary communicators. They communicate with other plants. They are able to distinguish kin and non-kin. They communicate with plants of other species. And they communicate with animals by producing chemical volatiles. For example, during the pollination. Now, the pollination is a very serious issue for plants because they need to move the pollen from one flower to the other. And they cannot move from one flower to the other. So they need a vector. And this vector is normally an animal. Many insects have been used by plants as vector for the transport of the pollination, but not just insects. Even birds, reptiles, and mammals like bats and rats are normally used for the transportation of the pollen. This is a serious business. We have the plants that are giving to the animals a kind of sweet substance, very energizing, having in change this transportation of the pollen. But some plants are manipulating animals, like in the case of orchids, that promise sex and nectar and give in change nothing for the transportation of the pollen. Now, there is a big problem behind all this behavior that we have seen. How is possible to do this without a brain? We need to wait until 1880, when this big man, Charles Darwin, published a wonderful, astonishing book that it's a revolution. The title is The Power of Movement in Plants. No one was allowed to speak about movement in plants before Charles Darwin. In this book, assisted by his son Francis, that was the first professor of plant physiology in the world in Cambridge, they took in consideration every single movement for 500 pages. And in the last paragraph of the book, that it's a kind of stylistic mark, because normally Charles Darwin stored in the last paragraph of a book the most important message. He wrote that it's hardly an exaggeration to say that the tip of the radicle acts like the brain of one of the lower animals. This is not a metaphor. he wrote some very interesting letter to one of his friends that was J.D. Hooker, at that time president of the Royal Society, so the maximum scientific authority in Britain, speaking about the brain in the plants. Now, this is a root apex growing against a slope. So you can recognize this kind of movement, the same movement that worms, snake, and every animals that are moving on the ground without legs, it's able to display. And it's not an easy movement, because to have this kind of movement, you need to move different regions of the roots and to synchronize this different region without having a brain. So we studied the root apex, and we found that there is a specific region that it's here depicted in blue that is called the transition zone. And this region, it's a very small region. It's less than 1 millimeters. And in this small region, you have the highest consumption of oxygen in the plants, and more important, you have this kind of signals here. The signals that you are seeing here are action potential, are the same signals that the neurons of my brain, of our brain, it's used to exchange information. Now, we know that a root apex have just a few hundred cells that show this kind of feature, but we know how big is the root apparatus of a small plant, like a plant of rye. We have almost 14 million of roots. We have almost 11.5 million of root apex, and a total length of 600 and more kilometers and a very high surface area. Now let's imagine that each single root apex is working in network with all the others. Here we have on the left internet, and on the right, the root apparatus. They work in the same way. They are a network of small computing machine working in networks. And why they are so similar? Because they evolved for the same reason, to survive predation. It's the same. They work in the same way. So you can remove 90% of the root apparatus and the plants follow to work. You can remove 90% of the internet and it is work following to work. So, a suggestion for the people working with networks. Plants are able to give you good suggestion about to evolve networks. And another possibility is a technological possibility. Let's imagine that we can build robots. And robots that are inspired by plants. Until now, the man was inspired just by the man or by the animals in producing a robot. We have the animaloid, and the normal robots inspired by animals, insectoid, and so on. We have the androids that are inspired by the man. But why we have not any plantoid? Well, if you want to fly, it's good that you look at the bird to be inspired by bird, but if you want to explore soils, or if you want to colonize new territory, the best thing that you can do is to be inspired by plants that are master in doing this. We have another possibility. We are working in our lab, is to build hybrids. It's much more easy to build hybrids. Hybrids means something that is half living and half machine. It's much more easy to work with plants than with animals. They have computing power, they have electrical signals, the connection with the machine is much more easy, much more even ethically possible. And these are three possibilities that we are working on to build hybrids driven by algae or by the leaves and at the end by the most powerful part of the plants, by the roots. Well, thank you for your attention. And before finish, I would like to reassure that no snails were harmed in making this presentation. Thank you.
That was Stefano Mancusco, recorded at TED Global 2010 in Oxford, England, July 2010. For more information on TED, visit TED.com.
Sequoia dendrum gigantinum. The biggest creature alive. Google it up to get an idea of the size of this tree. But first, try to say its name. Sequoia dendrum gigantinum. If you want to look it up, it is spelled Sequoiadendrum. Sequoia dendrum gigantinum. Gigantinum. Michael Pollan, an author that has published several books on food and plants, asked himself this question while he was planting potatoes in his garden. Did that bee pollinating that plant, and did I, planting these tomatoes, choose to do it? Or did the plants, using diverse strategies, select us to spread them around? That question stuck with me, as Stefano Mancuso explains. Humans hubristically consider ourselves the most developed and intelligent species of creation. And when it comes to other species, we proudly announce that our dogs are able to sit, lay, or shake your hand on command. But absent from these discussions are the more than astonishing interactions that plants like Salvia divinorum, ayahuasca, and iboga, among many others, have when they come into contact with the human nervous system. Why is it that the components of these and many other plants fit into some neuroreceptors of the human brain perfectly? It's like these molecules are the keys that fit into and open the locks in our brains to allow us to communicate without human language with what feels like a very intelligent and evolved form of life. What animal can do that? This episode is dedicated to one of my dearest and most reliable plant allies. This is a tree originary from Southeast Asia, and it grows naturally in countries such as Indonesia, Thailand, Malaysia, and Bali. This is one of the most amazing plants that I've ever come across, because it has the very weird quality of being beneficial for mostly any purpose and use that you give to it. The name of this magnificent plant is Kratom.
The following is a color classification of plants according to their properties and use. Healing plants. White. Energy boosters. Red. Relaxing plants and sleep aids. Blue. Memory and concentration enhancers. Orange. Plants to explore oneself and peek into the unknown. Purple. Kratom is, paradoxically, partly a white, red, blue, orange, and purple plant. It can provide healing, energizing, relaxing, concentration enhancing, and insightful effects and benefits to the mind and body. Kratom's effects can be very different, depending on the person, the dose, the strain, and the type of Kratom that one takes. In general, the effects of Kratom can be described as stimulating at low doses and sedating at higher doses, with a wide range of effects in between, such as euphoric, aphrodisiac, lucid dream inducer, talkative, gregarious or reflexive, and meditative. There are many different strains of Kratom, each with its unique blend of alkaloids, which yields subtle differences in the effects of each strain. All of these strains, however, fall into one of these two categories,
red vein kratom trees, and white or green vein kratom trees. The leaves from red vein kratom tend to be more sedative, even in lower doses, and not particularly stimulating. Generally, red vein kratom leaves are used for pain relief and opiate detox therapies. The white vein kratom leaves, also called green vein kratom, provide more stimulating and sometimes euphoric feeling. It gives endurance for repetitive work and exercise, but it also brings inspiration and motivation, aiding the creative process.
Kratom, or Mitrogena speciosa, its scientific name, originated in Central and South Thailand. And today, it grows wild and also in special plantations in many countries of Southeastern Asia. The natives of these areas have been using kratom for centuries, since the peasant workers found out long ago that chewing on the kratom's tree leaves helped them endure the daily long hours of hard physical labor in a much better way. They appreciated kratom for its mood lifting as well as its aphrodisiac effects. And it was said that it was best to give a daughter's hand in marriage to a man that ate kratom, rather than to a man that ate cannabis, as the former worked far harder and were way more active than the latter. Kratom has also been used as a very effective antidiarrheic and to help relieve the pains of a fever. When the Chinese introduced opium to Asia, kratom was found very useful in the treatment of opiate addiction. In 1943, Thailand passed the Kratom Act, making possession and use of kratom illegal, and tried to eliminate all kratom trees from the land. Today, kratom possession in Thailand carries the death penalty. Everything seems to indicate that kratom's ability to help kick the habit of opiates, such as morphine, oxycodone, and heroin, is not very financially convenient to some sectors. Meanwhile, countries like Singapore, Malaysia, and Indonesia have been growing kratom for many years. And since the advent of the internet, with the possibility to send anything to any part of the world, kratom has been growing in popularity and is beginning to be recognized worldwide as a plant with numerous benefits and uses.
You're listening to the Wise Plants Podcast. Have you found your plant ally yet?
You wake up late. Time to get ready. Time to go to work. No time to make the coffee. So you add half a teaspoon of kratom, the green vein kratom from Bali, to your orange juice bottle. And you shake it as you rush to your car. As you're driving, you slowly begin to realize the tension.
is beginning to dissipate. That oppressing feeling in the chest is gone. And the morning's rush hour seems to blend perfectly well with the song you're singing along to. Now, when you go through all the things you gotta do in your day, it kind of looks exciting now. A little. So you enter the place of your daily dread, and you greet the receptionist, this time with a heartfelt smile, and you feel the spark of a joke come out of your lips. The day goes by so blissfully quick, and you finished your stuff. You're free for the day. As you drive back home, you think about your own, your secret little projects, your long shots at financial independence, and you recognize that you've been putting it aside for a long, long time with the same old excuses. The lack of time and energy, the excess of work, the common distractions, and inspiration, that's gone. But not today. Today is good. Today feels bright. And you still feel the energy. And you're focused and calm. Now, as you start thinking about all the things you're gonna do when you get back home, you smile. It kind of feels like a fresh new beginning for your day.
A word of caution. Kratom is not a particularly addictive plant, but some measures should be taken to avoid becoming dependent on the plant. In terms of addiction, kratom can be compared to a cup of coffee, but without the headaches and the shakes that some people get when stopping coffee. It is similar in that the user can become accustomed to the ritual of drinking a kratom tea, and the user could get some anxiety of stopping its use suddenly, after a long time of daily use. However, most people don't get more than a little anxiety for the couple of days after, although some people report sleeplessness or mild depression for a few days after quitting kratom. To avoid any undesirable effect, moderation is key with kratom, as with everything else. In general, it is suggested to limit kratom use to no more than 3 times a week, and to have long breaks of a few weeks every month or less. Becoming familiar with the dose and effects is also important. Learn to use less if you're looking for energy, and more for pain relief or tension. There rarely is a good reason to increase the dose, and if tolerance starts building, it is a good idea to stop kratom ingestion for a couple of weeks to break the tolerance. Finally, the person getting off of kratom will do well in substituting the kratom tea with any other kind of tea. Plants like chamomile, skullcap, seven blossoms, Coca-Cola, and many others can be good substitutes and allow to continue practicing the daily ritual of drinking tea.
There seems to be a lot of people that would like to reduce or stop their caffeine intake. This can be a little hard for someone used to waking up with the rich and comforting flavor of fresh morning coffee, or to a person used to getting a couple more hours of productive energy in the afternoon when we start to wind down. There's almost immediate anxiety when people talk about stopping coffee, even for a few days. And the next 1 or 2 weeks after stopping caffeine ingestion can be a little uncomfortable for some, or an agony for others. There are delightful ways of substituting coffee in the mornings. A good rule of thumb is to get a healthy meal or snack instead of a cup of coffee, something that will provide real energy. A few months back, I came up with my daily mornings variety tea, and now I basically drink a different beverage every morning to wake up. For example, Mondays I like to drink green tea from Japan. Really good quality green tea is delicious, and I love seeing the leaves bubbling oxygen when they touch the hot water. Even if green tea is not as energizing as coffee, it puts the brain into an alpha state, which increases concentration and attention. Tuesday. Yerba mate. Yerba mate contains matein, which is basically the same molecule as caffeine, but it contains it in much lower doses. Yerba mate is just amazing. I think it gives a type of energy that feels cleaner, more relaxed, and focused. Wednesday. Coffee day. I'll wake up with the smell of coffee and enjoy a cup of strong black coffee immensely. I find that even after a few days of not drinking coffee, I need to drink less, as my tolerance is reduced. Thursday. Kraton. I'll make a kraton tea or add half a teaspoon to natural orange juice and shake well. The day goes by pleasantly and actively. Friday. I like to improvise on Fridays. Depending on the day's activities or my mood, I'll either have another cup of mate or green tea, or I may go a little more exotic and prepare a fruit shake, adding a little powdered kola nut, one of the main ingredients in Coca-Cola, which contains caffeine, or I may add mahuang instead, the Chinese plant that contains ephedrine, to get a different kind of energy. Saturdays and Sundays, I try not to take anything energizing nor stimulating, and I also try to drink a cup or two of cleansing plants. However, I may gladly drink a cup of coffee after a Saturday's meal with friends, or a cup of kraton on a Sunday's evening conversation. Obviously, I do not follow this diet religiously, and I vary it often. For instance, I may use guarana in powdered form with juice or water instead of green tea on Mondays if there's a lot of activity and work to be done, or I may substitute any of them with a ginseng or astragalus tea, more useful to tonify and fortify the body and the system than to energize. The plant allies that can aid our mornings in the absence of coffee are many. and finding one's own mix is a rewarding task, well worth considering.
Listening to the
Wise Plans
podcast.
All right. Hey George, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. How about yourself?
I'm great. And well, I've been thinking about and writing about and using some Kratom lately to do the show, and I discovered something funny, because it's one of my favorite plants, but when you actually try to describe it or talk about it, there's not a lot to say about it. It's not as easy as salvia, that everybody has an amazing experience or visions or weird things happen.
Yeah.
But a plant so useful to everyday life as Kratom, I'm kind of struggling to think what else to say about this great planet. How about you? You tried Kratom a few years back, I think, also.
Yeah.
What has been your story with it?
Well, a lot of the feelings that I get, a lot of the sensations are very difficult to describe. But you said it yourself, it's a plant. It's one of your favorite plants. It's one of my favorite as well. And the effects that I get from it, it's amazing. It's a very relaxing effect. Opens your mind to new ideas. When you're working, it's great. Clears up your mind. Also, when you're alone and you drink a couple of cups, you know, you get to a point where you're not going to fall asleep, but you're going to daydream. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
That's one of my favorite things to do with Kratom.
It's amazing.
The body goes to sleep, no, but the mind is still lucid and remembering that you're there at the same time that you're kind of having some dreams.
Exactly. That's the way it feels. My favorite experience with it, it's when I'm working.
What's different when you're working and using Kratom and when you're working and not using Kratom?
Well, see, I deal with people every day. And I have to wake up at 6 in the morning. I have to be at work at 7.
Do you drink coffee?
No, I can't drink coffee. I'm hypersensitive to caffeine. So this is another thing I was going to say. It's my alternative to coffee. No, it wakes me up, it relaxes me, and it just opens up my mind. It just makes me feel great and open to concepts and to other people that in a different situation I might consider dull or not interesting, you know? So I can say it's a great little plant.
So you're saying that it improves the way you do the work?
It does improve it, and it makes it a lot more enjoyable. To me, that's the most important thing. Because I can do a good job without it, but if I take it, it's just I'm going to enjoy it.
All right.
So it magnifies the joy of life at that moment.
Every detail.
Every single detail, it's magnified. It's like if you put it under a microscope and you are able to see every string of fabric, no, from a piece of cloth, and you enjoy every single one of them.
Now, one thing that happens to me with coffee, if I drink a cup of coffee in the morning, by midday I'll be crashing, and I'll feel a lack of energy that, well, means that I either need to take another cup of coffee or eat something or wait for this feeling to pass. Do you feel anything similar happens to Kratom? A crash?
Not at all, man. It's just, it takes off and it's, you don't crash. You can take more after that, and it's just going to, like I said, magnify the feeling, the sensation, you know, and there's no crash to it. There's no feeling down after it. You know, it's like when you take a Red Bull, which I can't, but I used to take those, and you felt great for a few minutes, and then you came down, and it was the worst feeling, yeah? But with Kratom, you take it, you feel great, and you feel great after.
Does it have any negative effects, or have you ever experienced something negative from it?
Nope, nothing. None whatsoever.
Any habituation, dependence, or...
No. No, when I have it, I love taking it. But you know, when I don't have it, I just live my life the normal way, you know? It doesn't make me feel like I can't do my job if I don't have it. It doesn't make me feel like I depend on it. I just love it. It's a great way to start your day. It's amazing. You take it there and you go on for a couple of hours. Like I said before and like you said before, you don't even feel the change when the effect wears out. And if you want to go to sleep and you want to feel relaxed, or you're just chilling with your family at the end of the day watching TV, it's a great way to enjoy the moment and to relax and go to sleep.
And let me ask you one final question. You know that the lower the dose, the more stimulating it is. And the more you increase the dose, it becomes more euphoric and then sedating.
Oh, yeah.
What kind of dose do you prefer?
It's different. It depends on the environment that you're in, on the atmosphere. That's how you know how much to take. For example, at work, I don't want to feel sedated. So I take just enough to feel euphoric, to feel open-minded, to feel great.
Active.
Active, exactly.
Concentrate. Do you feel it helps you concentrate, focus?
Definitely. Definitely. If I'm in a party or I'm having a great time, I can say right now I'm not drinking alcohol, any alcohol at all. So if I take a higher dose, it's going to be fun. You feel really good.
Do you miss the alcohol when you're having kratom in the parties, seeing everybody get drunk?
Alcohol, it's a different thing. It is missed. I love getting wasted, but at the same time, it's not needed, no? I think I'm learning to enjoy my reunions, my parties without being drunk. And kratom is a great help, you know? You feel very talkative, you feel very open. Everything is very welcoming to you as well as to others that are around you.
What's your favorite type of kratom?
Bali. Bali, hands down. It's the best for me.
Yeah, more than the Borneo one?
I had a chance to try that one you said a few days ago, and it was great. It was amazing. I loved it. But Bali, to me, I can identify myself with that one. It's my ally. You know, that's the one for me.
Great. All right, George. Well, I want to thank you so much for participating again and giving us your perspective on kratom.
No, thank you for letting me do this, and can't wait for the next one.
All right, man.
Later.
And with this, we reach the conclusion of episode number 2 of the Wise Plants podcast. I hope you enjoy the show, and please join us back next time for the episode number 3, which will probably be about plants that enhance brain function and help memory and concentration. For now, this is Guillermo signing off. Be well. All of the Wise Plants podcast episodes, unless explicitly mentioned, are protected under the Creative Commons Sharealike Non-Commercial 3.0 license, which allows you to use, share, or modify this program in any way you choose, as long as your project is for non-commercial purposes only, and you credit me as the author as well as provide the link to the show. And if you have any questions about this, please Google the Creative Commons license to find out more about this great way of protecting your media. The
tomorrow.